You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today, Friday, July 20, 2018. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I'm going to be taking a very deep dive into the murky waters of the swamp, of course, with the news. There's so much news, but of course, one of the bigger pieces of information that should alarm people, that should really answer a lot of questions and address many of these narratives, these stories on the internet about really what's taking place. I think it's pretty clear that the crux of today's program is going to address the alleged Podesta immunity deal in the Paul Manafort case. Now, just to be clear, all right, because this gets deep, it gets dark, convoluted, it already is, it's ugly, it is bifurcated justice, it is justice that is not American style. Remember that old show, Love American Style? Well, this is not justice American style. This is a gulag type treatment of Paul Manafort. Look, I'm no fan of Manafort. I've said that in the past. However, we are watching the systemic and system, well, the systemic issues, the systemic problems within our Justice Department, but the systematic dismantling of our nation. This is how significant this is. I'm going to try to break this down for you. So please, a couple of things I ask. As usual, please listen to the entire broadcast. I want to connect some dots at the end. Hopefully, they will make sense to you. But as I sit here and look at this, from my investigative viewpoint, I'm seeing some very troubling things. And this could play out a number of different ways. I'm certain of one thing. The way this will play out is not going to be favorable, in my view, to anybody in the United States. When I say that, I'm saying that there are no good choices here on the table. And I think this is a clear indication. If there is nothing else, if there is no other topic, this is a clear indication of the activities of the deep state. You know, yesterday, Judge Jeanine Pirro was on The View. And I'm not going to play the audio clip. It's just over talk, shouting, and a bunch of nonsense. I don't even understand how The View is still on. But a couple of notable things from her appearance. Number one, she appeared there without being told that Anna Navarro from CNN was going to be present. And I've attended a couple of events like this where the radio station, network, program, whatever, the producer will set you up, all right? So it was meant to be contentious for sure. That's an obvious, that's a given. But the other part of this, did you notice, if you saw or listened to the audio segment from Judge Jeanine on The View, did you notice Whoopi Goldberg? And that's the essence of this appearance. It was Judge Jeanine versus Whoopi Goldberg or vice versa. Whoopi Goldberg went on the offensive right away against Judge Jeanine. And her question that Judge Jeanine was not given a chance to answer was, you know, who is this deep state? What is this deep state of which you speak? And then she launched into this ad hominem attack against Judge Jeanine, and it devolved from there. And then according to Judge Jeanine herself, there were some expletives following the off-camera. Once off-camera, there was another exchange, and Whoopi got within inches of Judge Jeanine's face saying, "Get the F out of here." I'm not quoting exactly. And spittle, of course, was a part of that. Some say Whoopi Goldberg spat on Judge Jeanine. I believe it's just the closeness spittle of emotion, raw emotion. This is what we've devolved. This is exactly what we have become by design as a nation. This incivility, the rise of incivility, which will lead into chaos and conflict on the ground. I spoke about this. I've warned about this. And you're probably sick and tired of hearing me say this. But my sources, again, back in 5 years ago, saying they, the deep state, want to create a civil war. Glenn Beck talked about this when he was, excuse my expression, when he had all of his marbles, all right? When he was talking about the deep state, he used my piece on one of his programs. This is the end game objective. The larger picture here, just to be clear one more time, the larger picture, it is Donald Trump in office, never expected to be there by the leftist communists. He's there. Now the deep state, first of all, the deep state as a subset of the shadow government attempted to keep him out of office. Failing that, now they are attempting to remove him from office, and they intend to do so by any and all means necessary. And I mean that when I say that. So we have to pray for President Donald Trump, pray for our nation, and be very, very mindful of the fact that this coup is still ongoing. For those new listeners, that's what this is all about. This is the biggest story of our lifetime. And that's what's on the table here. This is for all of the marbles at this point. Now, as we look toward the midterm elections, the absolute desperation of the communist left, because Hillary did not win in 2016, now they've got to win in 2018. The left, the deep state, the communists, they've got to win in 2018. They must win. If they don't win, in my view, all hell is going to break loose, well beyond anything that we're seeing in the run-up to 2018. Because they know it's over by any legal means. It's over. It just makes everything exponentially more dangerous. That's the bigger view. That's kind of giving you a sketch of just an outline of what's taking place. The plan always was for Hillary to finish up what Obama didn't. Hillary never got that chance. Obama, by the way, as is Hillary and others, are still working in the background to change that. All right, that's the big picture, because obviously, even on an international scale, we're looking at events of international proportions with international consequences. Hence the New World Order phrase, New World Economic Order, New Economic World Order, New whatever. You know that phrase, the trigger phrase for sites like Right Wing Watch, Southern Poverty Law Center, and others to say, "Oh, you're a crazy man." But that's what it's all about. This is to implement that collective control over the populace, because you and I, well, we are not invited to to the party. We're not invited to the event. We're not supposed. I mean, if we don't serve as worker bees for the Uber class, the super class, then, well, they don't need us. That's where we're at. And again, I say it's for all the marbles. So drilling down, because news, events, things that affect this are taking place every single day. And it's the hands of this poker game are being shown to the camera, but not to other players necessarily. Not all the time. Some know other people's hands, but we see them all at this point, or most of them. And here is the latest. And I think when you go back to one specific program I did back in 2017, I talked about this very issue. As a matter of fact, I talked about it before Tucker Carlson talked about it. And that's the news of today, where the special counsel, Robert Mueller, is offering Tony Podesta immunity. Immunity to testify against Paul Manafort. Okay, now think about this for a second. It's akin to offering Clyde immunity to testify against Bonnie. Or insert analogy here. You get the idea. Think about this, and think about the stature, the position of the Podesta brothers in this mix. And also think about Robert Mueller. Because, again, how anyone could possibly believe that Mueller is some sort of white hat in all of this, especially after this, I don't know what to tell you. It goes back to Uranium One. It goes back to a number of other issues. And, in fact, I want to give you a timeline, kind of an overview of Uranium One and why this is happening, because all of this is interconnected. And, you know, at the epicenter, I mentioned, I think it was yesterday, one of the programs this week, I believe it was yesterday, when Kevin Shipp, who's going to be on our program, by the way, he tweeted out yesterday about after he discussed Hillary, Diane Rodham Clinton, as being in her position within the deep state, as this grand dame of the deep state, how there was a physical intrusion at his residence. There were phone taps and bona fide phone taps, which were proven by electronic experts. Look, Kevin Shipp is a former CIA officer. He knows what he's talking. There's one thing you can believe. Kevin Shipp knows exactly what he's talking about because of his position within the CIA. Now, a lot of strange things started happening, and you can check my personal Twitter feed. This is not a promotion of that, but it's there. It's at Hagman PI. Pay follow me if you want, but it's right there where once you start probing this, strange things happen. And I want to tell you something. That's at the crux. That's the essence of what is happening to all of us in the new media. It's not only to Kevin. It's not only happening to Kevin Shipp. It's happening to many of us. And as I talk personally, this radio program, the Doug Hagman Radio Show, as we get deeper into the Clinton factor, the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, the very people representing that, the Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Foundation, the friends, the people, let me tell you something. It gets very warm. It gets very uncomfortable. For operational security reasons, that's as far as I'm going to go. But I'll tell you this, there is blowback, and it is formidable. That's not to say anything except it's real, period. Now, and it's dangerous, extremely dangerous. which is why we see the big talkers go only so far, because they have handlers. They have people who say, okay, you can go this far and no farther. Sure, you can talk about it to this point, but that's where you stop. Because you go too deep, well, we just can't tell you. We can tell you enough to keep you entertained, to keep you on the hook, but we can't go into the full story. I've got a signed statement in my office. Those of you who heard this story before, from a talk show host, very well known, came to me in my capacity as an investigator, swore out a statement about the being told how far he could go, what he could talk about as it related to on a national show, one of the biggest national talk shows in the country at that time and perhaps even now, how far he could go. What he was told, that if he would talk about the eligibility factor of Obama, the eligibility of Obama as president, that his program would be basically tanked. And this was a talk show. Just consider that. One of the most powerful and influential voices in America. And he said, I want you to have this. I want you to have this statement. I'm going to give this statement to you because you are an investigator at that time, licensed in the state of New York. And I know that my attorneys have researched. I want you to know this in case anything happens, and my research with my attorneys. It's a long story, but because of the factors of my licensing, not allowed to talk anything further beyond that, except to say it exists. So if something would happen to this individual, not just his attorneys, but and law firms, but myself and some other media outlets would have a statement of what happened to this man a number of years ago with respect to being threatened. So everything that we saw back then is happening now. And the essence now is, of course, Manafort digging Mueller digging into Manafort and offering immunity to Podesta, to Tony Podesta, the brother of John Podesta, and how this affects, and I'm going to connect these dots for you, how this affects Uranium One, how this affects the coverage, how this affects Mueller, who was the guy who was selected as the special counsel. He was the best and virtually the only choice because he served as the director of the FBI from September 4, 2001 for a number of years thereafter, covering most of Obama and Hillary Clinton's criminal activity. So he had to be appointed. It was him or no one else. He had to be appointed to make sure others were protected. That's what people are not really understanding. A lot of people aren't understanding this. It could not have been anyone else. It had to be Robert Mueller. So Robert Mueller is working not for the sake of justice, not for the sake of truth, but working as a barrier against the truth. This has nothing to do with Russian collusion. This has everything to do with covering the crimes, the criminal activity, in my view, by Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Sotaro, Hillary Clinton, and every member around them, every one of their comrades, pun intended, at the executive level, in the intelligence community, essentially at all levels. That's what we're talking about. So let me do this. Let me start out by saying it was in October of last year when Manafort, obviously remember, Manafort was indicted by Mueller, not having to do with anything with respect to the campaign, Donald Trump, the 2016 election, but for failing to register as a foreign agent. That particular law, there's statistics out there. It's been in existence for quite some time, but since I think Tucker Carlson might reference this, give you some statistics, and there are two audio clips I'm going to play. One of Tucker Carlson from October of 2017 to lay out the case that you're going to hear about, and then from yesterday. Two clips, same person, same topic, and how they connect and what this specifically is all about. You're hearing Manafort or Podesta getting immunity for testifying against Manafort, for actually engaging in the same activity. But this will, in my view, this will lay this out perfectly. The first audio segment is just over 10 minutes. Please bear with me and please listen to that audio segment in its entirety. It gives you the entire context, which is necessary for understanding. So as we sit around the conference table with our files and our coffee and our whiteboard and our sleeves rolled up, kind of unraveling this criminal racketeering operation of Clinton and Obama and the deep state and the shadow government as we do this, well, this is necessary to lay the foundation for what comes next. It's telling. One more time. This is from October of 2017. So there, this program, during this episode, I will have played two clips. The first one, Tucker Carlson, October 2017. Second one, Tucker Carlson, yesterday. Same person talking about the same topic. And then we're going to connect everything together and explain why this is so significant, especially in the wake of the information by Strzok and Page, by Batman and Lois Lane, or Superman and Lois Lane, you know, the two, and some information about Strzok, which you may or may not have already heard, his upbringing, his relationship, his father's and the relatives, but specifically his father, his work in Iran, and how Strzok was schooled in Iran and Saudi Arabia, and how that all fits into this convoluted mess. Oh, it gets worse. Oh, trust me, it gets worse. But here, first, to set the foundation for you and I, is the October 30, 2017. And I saved this on my hard drive. And as I was looking through, I keep very detailed notes, as I was looking through the various audio segments by name, this one jumped out at me. And then I started researching. I thought, wow, yes, okay. And then once I looked at the entire thing, I realized, okay, now we've got the complete picture. And this is extremely critical to play this entire audio segment after listening to it and looking over the information contained therein. So here it is, the clip from October 30, I believe it was October 30, 2017, Tucker Carlson. Have a listen to this. We're going to come back after this clip, or I'll come back after this clip, and we're going to continue this discussion and show you exactly what's happening and really what we are likely to expect based on this new information. But in order to understand that, we have to look at the old. Play it.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. We have exclusive new reporting on a story that has turned Washington upside down and caused more intrigue than anything in the city I've seen in 25 years. As, of course, you've heard, independent counsel Robert Mueller's investigation has zeroed in on its first targets. Today, former Donald Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his business associate Rick Gates were both indicted on charges of money laundering, tax fraud, and failure to report lobbying arrangements. Now, the indictment, among other things, offers tantalizing details about how foreign lobbying actually works at the highest levels in Washington, how Manafort allegedly used laundered offshore cash to buy Range Rovers, expand his wardrobe, somehow spend $655,000 on landscaping for his house in the Hamptons. Manafort's indictment comes as, honestly, no surprise to anyone who's been in Washington for a while and has watched him operate, though, of course, the legal system will make the final call on that. It's pretty clear, though, that Paul Manafort is just the first in a series of people in D.C. who are suddenly in deep, deep trouble. Who's next? Well, reading between the lines of the indictment and talking to a number of our own sources, we think we've got a pretty good idea of that. Keep in mind that today's indictment never mentions Donald Trump's presidential campaign or the 2016 election. It only mentions Russia in passing, even though Russian meddling was the pretext for this investigation in the first place. Instead, the indictment catalogs Manafort's efforts to lobby on behalf of pro-Russia groups in Ukraine. The indictment goes into great detail on the relationship between Manafort and two mysterious groups described in the document as Company A and Company B. Those companies, we can report tonight, are Mercury LLC, that's led by former Republican Congressman Vin Weber, and the Podesta Group, founded by Tony Podesta and his brother John, whom you'll remember as Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman. None of this will come as a shock to viewers of this show. Last Tuesday, we told you that the Mueller investigation is no longer primarily a search for Russian collusion in the 2016 race. It is now a much far-reaching inquiry into corrupt lobbying practices across D.C., one that is very likely to ensnare figures close to Hillary Clinton. In press accounts, Mueller's investigation is still framed as a hunt for collusion between Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the government of Russia. Our source says investigators are, in fact, very interested in Manafort's behavior while he ran the Trump campaign, but otherwise that description is mostly bogus. The investigation has broadened now to determine which people and which organizations in Washington have spent years working secretly as de facto operatives on behalf of Russian government and business interests. The Podesta Group is chief among these. Quote, they are more focused on facilitators of Russian influence in this country, says our source, than they are on election collusion. The Podesta Group, he says, quote, is in their crosshairs. Well, that segment, which ran last week, provoked a snarling legal threat from Tony Podesta today, designed to shut us up. That's not going to happen, obviously, but we'll tell you a lot more about it in just a minute. Last week, we explained how Paul Manafort, used a sham group called the European Center for a Modern Ukraine to lobby on behalf of pro-Russian forces in Ukraine. Those forces sought a number of changes to American policy, changes to the Republican platform, for example. Some of the changes are obviously contrary to America's interests and values. Among them, they wanted the U.S. government to support the imprisonment of one of the Ukraine president's political opponents. Shady does not begin to describe this operation. Even some of Tony Podesta's own employees thought the whole thing was disgusting. Well, today's indictment confirms our reporting on this. It describes the Center for Modern Ukraine as a fake organization, merely, quote, a mouthpiece for the Ukrainian president, Yanukovych. The indictment also confirms that the lobbying groups Manafort hired in Washington, including Tony Podesta's, knew perfectly well that the Center for the Modern Ukraine was fake when they signed on to represent it. According to the feds, Podesta's company was told explicitly they would be lobbying on behalf of the Ukrainian president. In November 2012, the indictment says, Manafort's business partner explicitly requested reports on lobbying activity by both those companies so that he could brief the president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, on what they were doing. It couldn't get dirtier. But despite apparently knowing they were acting as foreign agents, agents of a foreign government, the Podesta Group never registered as foreign agents. Failure to do that is against the law. In April 2012, the Podesta Group filed documents with Congress relating to its work with the Center for a Modern Ukraine. At the time, they falsely claimed that group was just a foreign NGO. The Podesta Group's filing contained a declaration by the Center for a Modern Ukraine that, quote, none of the activities of the center are directly or indirectly supervised, directed, controlled, financed, or subsidized in whole or in part by a government of a foreign country or a foreign political party. That declaration, false, was endorsed as true by Kimberly Fritz, now the CEO of the Podesta Group and a former Jeb Bush staffer, all apparently a lie. Moreover, according to today's indictment, the Podesta Group must have known it was a lie when they signed that document. Under the law, the firm should have immediately registered with the government, the U.S. government, under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Instead, the Podesta Group waited until spring 2017, this year, to do that, and then somehow applied the status retroactively. By that point, the Center for Ahmadi in Ukraine had effectively been out of business for 3 years. It was a little late. Interestingly, the Podesta Group filed those late papers just weeks after media outlets began reporting that law enforcement was investigating Manafort's offshore bank accounts. Connection? But wait, why would Ukrainian interests hire Tony Podesta in the first place? Well, according to a former Podesta employee we spoke to over this weekend, even foreign officials in distant lands understood that Tony Podesta's brother was John Podesta, a key Clinton confidant. It was widely known the two brothers had dinner together every Sunday night. Quote, "That's not something we hid from clients of the firm. They loved hearing that." Even a native Russian speaker could grasp the point of all of this. The Podesta Group was hired by Paul Manafort on behalf of foreign clients because the company was perceived to have a direct line to powerful politicians. John Podesta was Hillary's campaign chairman. Tony Podesta had been friends with Bill Clinton since the midterm elections of 1970. Influence peddling 101. How central were the Podesta's political connections to their profit model? Consider this. The firm's billing dropped dramatically almost immediately after Hillary Clinton lost the race for president. That tells you a lot. Mueller's investigators apparently figured this out. Today, Tony Podesta resigned as head of his company. His excuse? Us. That's right, he blamed us. In his parting statement, Podesta said this, quote, "It is impossible to run a public affairs firm while you're under attack by Fox News and the right-wing media." Well, Podesta isn't just complaining about us, though. He's threatening us. This afternoon, we got a letter from Jeff Garenther. He's a lawyer with Venable LLP, a big law firm here in D.C. The letter demands that this show, quote, "immediately cease and desist disseminating false and misleading reports about Mr. Podesta and the Podesta Group. It demands we retract and delete all our prior reporting on the Podesta Group and warns that if we don't do this, quote, Mr. Podesta may pursue legal action, including for damages, in order to fully protect his rights." The letter doesn't stop there, though. It also warns us that we will face legal action under the Copyright Act merely for quoting from this letter publicly, as we just did. The most amusing line, though, is this one. Quote, "Paul Manafort did not work with the Podesta Group in its representation of the European Center for a Modern Ukraine." That's what the lawyer's letters told us. Apparently, that lawyer hasn't read the Manafort indictment yet. In paragraph 22 of that indictment, we read this, quote, "At the direction of Manafort and Gates, companies A and B engaged in extensive lobbying on Ukraine." The indictment also says that the Podesta Group and Mercury were selected personally by Paul Manafort to lobby on behalf of Ukrainian interests. So if John Podesta's legal team has a complaint, it's not with us, it's with the Department of Justice and the Mueller investigation. But maybe we're being too literal about this. Probably so. Podesta's lawyer wasn't trying to inform us of anything, but to threaten us, to shut down our reporting on his client. One lawyer we talked to earlier today said the Podesta people have used this tactic with others before. It's common. It's an effort to use fear to control press coverage. We're not intimidated. We have ample evidence from Mueller's indictment and from a number of confidential sources to paint a pretty clear picture of exactly what the Podesta Group was doing for years here in Washington. We'll let the facts speak for themselves. And we're confident the Mueller investigation will be revealing a lot more about Tony Podesta's lobbying practices in the near future. In the meantime, if you're looking for a summary of all of this, here's the one-sentence cliff note to the whole affair. The chairman of one major presidential campaign colluded with the brother of the chairman of the other major presidential campaign to enrich themselves by secretly advancing the interests of a foreign adversary. That happened. That's the swamp they told you needed to be drained. Jonathan Turley teaches law right in the middle of the swamp. He's a professor at George Washington University Law School, and he joins us tonight. Mr. Turley, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So you don't often hear of people prosecuted for violating the FARA Act, the requirement, legal requirement to register as a foreign lobbyist when you lobby for a foreign government. A lot of people here do it. Very few, relatively few, register. Why is that unenforced?
Well, it's only been a handful of prosecutions, and to have it in this mix is odd. It's like, you know, being chased by a bunch of Rottweilers and a Chihuahua. You know, it's not exactly a fierce charge to face. But it was brought in this case, and I think it sends a signal to others like Flynn, like Tony Podesta, that these are charges that could be brought. I think this indictment is saying that the special counsel is prepared to indict anyone for anything within his mandate. But he's clearly focusing on these types of financial transactions and registration violations. Now, FARA violations are a bit deadly in one sense, and that is some of these violations are registration violations. Jurors tend to treat those as basically cut and dry. If they're convinced that you had to file, then you're guilty. So you can secure these types of convictions. But they're in a mix with very serious crimes.
Well, but they seem serious. I mean, look, this whole investigation appears to be focused on the question of foreign influence. How do foreign governments affect American policy?
Yeah.
The decisions our government makes. And there is a law, it seems to be a meaningful one, saying if you're doing the bidding of a foreign power, you have to tell us about it. Why is that considered a small violation?
Well, it's small because it's often been dealt with administratively. When you violate it, the response, like the Podesta group did, was to retroactively file. And
right.
The Department of Justice has allowed that. Clearly, Mueller is not following that pattern. He is taking the view that, you know, if you violated FARA, we can charge you criminally, we will. It'd be hard not to see that charge brought against people like Flynn. You could white out Manafort's name and put in Flynn and basically use
for
that same paragraph.
The work he did for the Erdogan government.
That's
Turkey.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this is a signal to others that these charges are likely to be brought.
So if FARA violations are basically looked past and you can retroactively file 4 or 5 years and right. call it good, this is an editorial comment, but I was interested in your view. Maybe that's one of the reasons D.C. is so corrupt, just throwing that out there.
Well, you know, when this first happened, when we went into the Russian money, my first response was Washington's awash with Russian money. And,
yes.
And the public are about to see that. This city has a real sordid side to
and
it.
And not just Russian money.
Absolutely. And people do influence peddle. And it's not exclusive to any particular party. And so I think what the Democrats are going to experience with the Republicans is that investigations are a lot like Saturn. They devour their own. And you're going to see an expansion here, clearly, bringing in other people. And the focus does appear by Mueller to be on the lobbying aspect, and you're right. This could actually be a historic this series of disclosures for the public. I think the public has no idea the level of influence peddling in Washington.
And I don't care who's swept up in it. If you're working on behalf of a foreign power against American interests, I hope you're exposed. I really do.
Well, I think they will be.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks,
John. Great to see you.
All right. That was Tucker Carlson. That aired October 30th or thereabouts, 2017. That was last year. There was a lot to unpack from that segment. Now, obviously, initially talking about two companies, Company A, Mercury LLC, Vin Weber, Company B, in this case, the relevant company, which was the Podesta Group, Tony and John Podesta. Okay, of course, going back to October 24th, 2017, when Carlson initially brought up the Podesta Group as it was related to Manafort, Gates, the entire FARA, the Foreign Registration Act, and such. Well, what happened subsequent to the October 24th, which that's a date certain, the October 24th show from Tucker Carlson, the Podesta Group's lawyers sent Tucker Carlson a cease and desist letter. Now, this is one of the components, and an important component that many people have forgotten about, I do suspect. But remember, this specific audio segment, and again, go back and listen to it. In fact, I'll put it as a standalone in the show notes in the program description for today's episode, where you can go back and listen to that or watch that segment over and over again if you need to and take notes during this. But remember, it was this segment that many on the right jumped up and said, yeah, you know, okay, Mueller is a white hat working on behalf of Donald Trump because now they're going after the Podesta Group. Remember that? And even to the extent where well, this is some sort of, you know, 3D chess game and such, all about Ukraine. And this has its tentacles into Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, and Uranium One. But remember, it was the Podesta Group, as a lobbying group, who suddenly lost a whole bunch of money, a whole bunch of clients, after the loss sustained by Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton for presidency. All of a sudden, the influence of the Podestas, well, gee whiz, not so much needed no mo'. Okay, anymore, that is. The threats is a specific and important component to this. Stop talking about this, that, among the other aspects of this. The Uranium One connection, the lobbying firm, the relationship to Gates and Manafort. You'll notice that Podesta, the Podesta brothers, they're out walking around. Manafort, up until recently, spending 23 and a half hours in solitary, now being moved to a more non-luxurious, shall we say, prison. Manafort, of course, could spend the rest of his life in prison. And I'm not sticking up for anything any one of these people did. What I'm doing is pointing out a couple of things. Obviously, the obvious difference in justice between you and I and those associated with Hillary Clinton. Listening to that, those people on November 1st will say, or on Halloween last year, saying, oh, the Clintons are going down. The Podestas are going down. Oh, really? All right. You got that from October of last year, October 30th, I believe it was, like I said. Now let's fast forward to last night. Based on the news that immunity would be granted to Tony Podesta. Again, stick with me. It's a complex subject. I'm going to put it all together, try to make it as simple as possible. But this is one of those turning points, one of those hinge moments in history, in judicial history specifically, but with specific regard to the independent counsel, special counsel, whatever you want to call Mueller, that is extremely telling. And could have ramifications, results, consequences far beyond anything anyone is thinking about right now. This next clip, a very short one, relative, I think 2 minutes, Tucker Carlson from July 19th, 2018, just last night. Have a listen.
Several months ago in this show, we broke the story of Tony Podesta's lobbying for Ukraine. Podesta, of course, is the founder of the now defunct Podesta Group, which for years was one of the biggest Democratic firms in Washington. He's also the brother of Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. He's also a close friend and a major fundraiser for Bill and Hillary Clinton. Now, the Podesta Group, we reported, worked with Paul Manafort to lobby on behalf of Ukrainian interests in the United States without properly registering at the time under the Foreign Agent Registration Act, which is called FARA. Manafort got in big trouble for that. He's now being held in solitary confinement. He's looking at a life sentence behind bars. And Tony Podesta? Whatever happened to him? Well, tonight we can report exclusively, based on two separate sources we spoke to today, that Tony Podesta has been offered immunity by Robert Mueller to testify against Paul Manafort. In other words, for a near identical crime, Bill and Hillary's friend could skate and emerge completely unscathed, while Paul Manafort may rot in jail. Only one of them made the mistake of chairing Donald Trump's presidential campaign. Maybe the most amazing is the pretext under which all of this is happening. The FARA law was passed back in 1938 in order to prevent the Nazi government from lobbying in the U.S. Over a 50-year period, from 1966 to 2015, a total of only 7 people were criminally charged under FARA. Many more could have been charged. Washington is brimming with unregistered foreign agents and has been for decades. And yet only 7 people were charged over 50 years. And yet in recent months, 3 people have been charged under FARA. What do they have in common? You guessed it, some connection to Donald Trump. Federal laws ought to be enforced. Unlike the left, we actually believe that. But they must be enforced equally, or they're not laws at all. They're political cudgels and tools of social control. They become illegitimate and scary. And this case ought to make you nervous.
Well, this case, I submit, I assert to you, ought to make everyone enlightened. You should be informed just by virtue of what is happening here. Now, some might say, well, you can't take this at face value. There's some backroom dealing, multiple levels going on in the background. Folks, it is what it is. Simply put, it is what it is. It's as simple as that. You've got Manafort, who is, look, he's not, in my view, I mean, he's not without dirt on his hands, but you've got the Podesta lobbying group, Tony Podesta, engaged in the very same activity as Manafort, yet is offered immunity to testify to bolster Mueller's case. The only difference, who's playing for whose team? Manafort, in this case, played for the Trump team. Podesta, on the other hand, the Clinton team. But what's the common factor here? Where does this all lead? And what does this tell us today? What can we extrapolate from this set of circumstances today? That's the important thing. And that's what's going to be making news. And that's what I want to really drive home, in at least in my view, my investigative assessment today. Now, you may recall WikiLeaks, the Podesta emails. WikiLeaks began a series on deals involving Hillary Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. Hang on, I'm getting to Tony. But Podesta, long-term associate of the Clintons, was President Bill Clinton's chief of staff from 1998 to 2001. He also controlled a part of the Podesta Group, a major lobbying firm, and was the chair of the Center for American Progress, a D.C.-based think tank. The initial segment, part one, shall we say, of the Podesta emails comprised some 2,060 emails and 170 attachments. That focused on John Podesta's communications relating to nuclear energy and the media handling over donations to the Clinton Foundation from mining and nuclear interests. Some 1,244 of the emails reference nuclear energy. All you have to do is look at WikiLeaks about the Podesta emails. It was in April of 2015 when the New York Times published a story about a company called Uranium One. Interestingly enough, it was New York Times, the mainstream media. Now, Peter Schweitzer wrote the book Clinton Cash that explains this in greater detail. Subsequent information to that, of course, has been broken and submitted by Peter Schweitzer. But it was Peter Schweitzer that did the legwork, the investigation, and wrote the book Clinton Cash, that in part dealt with the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One. Remember, during Uranium One, Mueller was head of the FBI during the Uranium One fiasco, the criminal activity. But again, April 2015, New York Times published a story about a company called Uranium One, which was sold to the Russian government-controlled interest, giving Russia effective control of one-fifth of all uranium production capacity here in the United States. And since uranium is considered a strategic asset with implications for the production of nuclear weapons, the deal had to be approved by a committee composed of representatives from a number of U.S. government agencies. That agency, of course, the umbrella agency is CFIUS. And among the agencies that eventually signed off on the deal was the State Department G. You know, at the time, that was headed by none other than Hillary Rodham Clinton. The Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, CFIUS, is that umbrella company, as I mentioned. So I just bumped the microphone cable. I apologize if you're listening with your earbuds, if that just blew your eardrums out. I apologize. Hopefully you can hear me. Let me just double check here. Live radio, isn't that great? Can you, all right, maybe that just, I think I just screwed something up there. Okay, test 1, 2. All right, let me move on here. Hopefully, again, this is not an issue. So at the center of this, what is being attempted right now with this immunity deal, what is being covered up, there's only one deduction that can be made, and that is the fact that while Mueller, who is now this independent counsel investigating Russian collusion, what is being covered up is the Uranium One deal at the heart of this. Because when you look back at the, at, go back to the, re-listen to what Tucker Carlson said October of 2017 about Manafort and the Podesta brothers, the lobbying group, Company A and Company B. That reference there. Oh, and everyone's, and again, I'm just recapping this. Everyone said, okay, this shows us that Mueller is actually going to expose all the components of the deep state. Now, several months after that October 2017 broadcast and the Manafort indictments referencing Company A and Company B, that would be the Mercury LLC and Podesta Group. Now we find out that the Podesta Group, hey, there, Tony Podesta is getting immunity. Go back to the emails again. The emails show that the contacts between John Podesta and a number of others, including one Jose Fernandez, go back to the time of internal Clinton campaign concern about the book that was not yet out then, Clinton Cash by Peter Schweitzer, on the financial dealings of the Clinton Foundation. If you don't think that people like us are making a difference, and this is the good part of this, because I know I'm getting short on time, it is people like Peter Schweitzer. It's people like Charles Ortel putting the pressure on, exposing the corruption to the public about the Clintons and about Mueller. That is making a difference. And unfortunately, people like Manafort are suffering, well, to a large extent, politically suffering, political prisoner-like, okay, while Podesta is, hey, home free, it seems. But, okay, go back to Clinton Cash. Go back to the time right before that and look at the WikiLeaks emails from John Podesta, between John Podesta and a guy by the name of Jose Fernandez and others within this internal Clinton campaign. There was an email dated March 29th, 2015, some 3 years plus ago, that Fernandez wrote to Podesta, John Podesta, where he said, "I trust you're getting a brief rest after a job well done. Thanks, no doubt, to your recommendation. I've joined the Center for American Progress Board of Trustees, which I'm finding extremely rewarding." Again, this goes, all of the reason I mention this is all of the players now are being exposed. And what we see is Mueller actively in this immunity deal, actively covering the tracks of Podesta. There is no white hat. There is no person on a white horse coming. There is nothing but plain and simple, downright political persecution in a country where we should have an equal system of justice where none exists at the moment. And that's the problem. This is the deep state, the shadow government pulling out all of the stops right in your face. And this is Mueller saying, in your face, buddy. This is the, Mueller is the Whoopi Goldberg, as Whoopi Goldberg treated Judge Jeanine, Mueller is looking at each one of us and treating us the same way. Get off my stage. So where this is all leading, we just go back to 2017. It was Mueller who unsealed charges. Again, we've got to understand this. Unsealed charges on October 30th against Paul Manafort and Rick Gates related to the lobby work they did from 2006 to 2015. Think about that. Think about 2006. This goes back to then. Now, according to the indictment, Manafort and Gates did not register as foreign agents while lobbying on behalf of the Ukrainian government. Neither did the Podestas. And Podestas, what they did was they retroactively filed. And, of course, that was after all hell broke loose with Manafort. But the case is much bigger. But see, And even back in October, November of 2017, people were saying, well, this is going to include actions related to the Podesta brothers. John Podesta was campaign manager of the Hillary Clinton campaign, and to a uranium deal tied to the Russians that the Clintons and Mueller, in which they were involved, Mueller was involved. The charges back in 2017 against Manafort and Gates arose from Mueller's assignment to investigate the collusion between Donald Trump and Russia, which doesn't exist. By the way, which the charges make no mention of. The alleged crimes took place well before Manafort and Gates even joined the Donald Trump campaign. So what's this all about? And Mueller unsealed his charges while under pressure to resign over conflicts. Remember the time. Conflicts of interest with Russia, with the Russia investigation, due to his role as FBI director while overseeing a Russian uranium deal. When Mueller was FBI director, the FBI was investigating a Russian campaign to grow its influence over the nuclear energy market in the United States. The Russian campaign was using bribery and kickbacks and extortion and money laundering. Where was Mueller? He was AWOL. But central to this campaign, as I mentioned, was the Russian acquisition of mining company Uranium One between 2009 and 2013. And former President Bill Clinton received $500,000 in speaking fees. Remember that? From a Kremlin-linked bank tied to the deal. The same month the deal was approved with Hillary Clinton in her role as Secretary of State serving on CFIUS that gave the green light to this particular deal. Russian investors linked to uranium deal also donated over $10 million to the Clinton Foundation. This was even reported in April 2015, as I mentioned in the New York Times. And in September of 2009, what's up with this? When Mueller flew to Moscow to provide Russia with a sample of 10 grams of highly enriched uranium, something that Snopes says, well, that's only partially true. And everyone's saying, oh, that's not what it seems to be. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. There was a cable released by the information by WikiLeaks that shows that Embassy Moscow requested to alert at the highest level, appropriate level of the Russian Federation that FBI Director Mueller was making that delivery. What was that all about? This is about a CIA operation. And at that time, as I mentioned, Mueller was head of the FBI. FBI agents had gathered evidence in 2009 and 2010 showing that Russia's uranium push included activities that were absolutely covert and illegal. It also states that federal agents observed as multiple arms of Putin's machine unleashed an influence campaign designed to win access to the new Secretary of State, her husband, and members of their inner circle. We're talking about Hillary, Bill Clinton, and the Podestas. Manafort was working closely with the Podesta group, and while the Podesta group was working closely with the Clintons, Manafort was acting as liaison between Russia and the Podesta group. Yes, Manafort's dirty, but so is Podesta, in my view, in my opinion. Legal threats are about this are just flying. Trust me. Tony Podesta, back in 2013, was speaking all the time with Hillary Clinton. During that time, the Uranium One deal was being facilitated by who? By Barack Hussein Obama, by the White House, and by the Department of State. There is not one shred of doubt from evidence that the Russians had set their sights on Hillary Clinton's circle because she was the quarterback of the Obama-Russian reset strategy and the presumed successor to Obama as president. By the way, Tony Podesta, brother of John Podesta, as I must remind everyone, still lobbied Washington on behalf of Russia's biggest bank, Sberbank. According to the Panama Papers, that understand the Panama Papers placement in this. Okay, top campaign, in Tony Podesta, top campaign bundler for the Clinton campaign. And Tony Podesta worked for the Russian bank to help lift some of the pain of the sanctions placed on Russia in the aftermath of the Kremlin's aggression against Ukraine, circumventing that whole thing. John Podesta as well, his own ties to Russia. While the uranium deal was going through, A report from the Government Accountability Institute said that 2011 Podesta joined the executive board of a small energy company called Juul Unlimited. This keeps going and going, but everything is what it seems to be. And this is the deep state's push. Manafort, hey, he's got his hands dirty, but so does Podesta. You see the links here? Mueller is in there because he is protecting Hillary Clinton.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.